Okay, so thanks for tuning in again to Mitzvah of the Week. So besides for three mitzvos in Bereishis, the first mitzvos in the Torah appear in this week's Parsha. Right? If you look in the Sefer HaChinuch, the fourth mitzvah in the Torah comes in this week's Parsha, and that's Kiddush HaChodesh, the requirement to calculate the calendar and to sanctify the months. So up until now, mitzvos I've been dealing with are either things that maybe have sort of an interesting relationship of being a mitzvah, or maybe just particular halachic topics that that are central, but not necessarily mitzvah d'oraisa. But now we're at that point going forward where for the most part, we could go directly into the parsha and find one of the 613 mitzvahs. So the mitzvahs this week, in this week's parsha, mostly have to do with Pesach. I actually chose not to do any of those for this week. I was thinking about it, but I think maybe the week or two before Pesach, or maybe even on Pesach itself, I'll give a shiur. Well, mitzvah of the week will be one of these mitzvahs of parsha about chametz or the korban Pesach or something like that. And what I want to do going forward, for the most part, again with these other mitzvahs, so I use various sources such as Rav Asher Weiss and Rav Binyamin Tabori mitzvah parsha and other sources to sort of put together, basic discussions on some of these topics. But a lot of what we'll do, particularly this weekend going forward, is we'll look, of course, I always like to look at the Mefarshim. If we're discussing something that's from the Parsha, I think it's nice to look at the Mefarshim a little bit, but then also use the Sefer HaChinuch as a springboard for what we're discussing. Just one disclaimer I want to make before going any further is that there's a challenge in discussing this particular mitzvah, and I thought a little bit about whether I was going to use this one because tefillin is gendered. So it's very easy for somebody to get up and say, when somebody or when Jews put on tefillin, as if everybody in the audience is involved in that. And yet the mitzvah of tefillin, we'll discuss this a little bit more briefly towards the end, but the mitzvah of tefillin in theory applies to men, but there is a message I'll give at the end that I think sort of shows how there's that I think specifically applies to everybody. And certainly the ideas that we're going to discuss throughout the shiur are relevant to both genders. So whether, one actually puts on the tefillin as an actual marker of these messages is separate, but I think the Torah behind it is still relevant and important to everybody. So I want to share my screen. Right now it's not giving me the option of where's this document. This is, I've never had this problem before. I've been using Zoom for 10 straight months. I've never once had this problem. All right, now we're really back. Let's try this again. Okay. All right, so the primary psukim that we're going to look at here, so I'm not going to go in depth, obviously, in all these psukim, but there's two passages at the end of the parsha. They comprise the seventh aliyah. And they read as follows. I'm going to go fairly quickly through this. Hashem commands Moshe saying, consecrate to me every firstborn man and beast. The first issue of every womb among the Israelites is mine. And then, for sake of time, and there is, we're running a little bit late already. So the Torah describes that we're supposed to remember this day as we're leaving Eretz Yitzrayim. Hashem's taking us out with the outstretched arm. There's a prohibition of chametz. Hashem's going to bring us to Eretz Yisrael. We're supposed to mention of eating matzahs. Lo yer lecha chametz. Not supposed to have chametz. Vigadta levincha. Supposed to pass it on to your children. That's the mitzvah for the Haggadah. So then we go on. V'hayalecha le'ot al yadcha zikaron bein einacha. It will be a sign on your hand, zikaron beinanacha, and a reminder on your forehead, laman tiyatrad Hashem beficha, in order that the teaching of Hashem be in your mouth, ki biyad chazaka hutziyacha Hashem mitzrayim, that with a mighty hand Hashem freed you from Egypt, v'shemarta chukaza l'mo adami yamima. You should keep this institution at its set time from year to year. Okay, and then we have another paragraph that also mentions Hashem bringing us to Eretz Yisrael, a mention of consecrating the firstborn cattle, And Peter Chamor, the firstborn of the donkey. And then Vehayaki ki yishalcha bincha machar lemor ma'azot, when your child asks you, what is this? Amarte Allah bechozik yad hutziyano Hashem mitzrayim beit avedim. Hashem took us out with an outstretched arm from the house of bondage. Vehayaki ikshav farol shalchenu, Paro was stubborn about sending us out. Ve'erog Hashem kol b'chor b'eretz Yitzrayim b'chor adam ve'ad b'chor b'ema. So Hashem killed the firstborn. Also, all the stuff that's discussed in this week's parsha, from the firstborn of a male to the firstborn of an animal. And therefore, I sacrifice to the Lord every first male issue of the womb, but redeem every firstborn among my sons. And shall be a sign upon your hand and as a symbol upon your forehead. That with a mighty hand, the Lord freed us from Egypt. Okay, so with that said, so if there's, we'll start with this. So Rashi says, this is the first mention of this putting a sign on your hand. So that's referring to Yetziat Mitzrayim to Yalachala Ot, that leaving Egypt should be a sign. So this mitzvah has to do with Yetziat Mitzrayim. And then you should write down these parshios and bind them upon your head and your arm. Chazal understand this to be the mitzvah of tefillin, as Rashi explains. For the most part, we might be familiar with the idea of putting on tefillin from Shema and Sefer Dvarim. But nonetheless, the first mention really of anything related to tefillin seems to come up in this week's Parsha. So what's the significance of this mitzvah? So Mefarshim actually go a lot into the significance of this Mishnah, this mitzvah. So Ramban writes, "Vinei shorash ha-mitzvah hazot, the root of this commandment, shenaniach tav yitzir b'tzirim al hayad v'arosh k'neged ha-lev ha-moach shehim mishkenot ha-machshava, that we should place in writing the story or mentioning the exodus from Egypt, it should be on our hearts and our hands. And why specifically around those locations? Because they are the dwelling places of thought." Kli Yarkar also drives at this a little bit, that that the hearts and the eyes are agents of sin. So if you look in Dvarim, it's Lutzadafot Bain. Is it that way here also? It's Bain Einacha. It's Bein Einacha and all these parashios. So, you know, so Karaites actually believe you should put it like between your eyes. Rabbinic Jews believe that it's not, you know, literally between your eyes, but between your eyes on your forehead. But the heart and the eyes are the agents of sin, and that's where we need the reminders of Hashem's existence. So there's this idea that that our arm and our head, again, the Mishkenot HaMachshava, that's where a lot of, you know, who we are and what we do starts from, the feeling, the emotion, the thought, the mind. So that's all connected here. Kli Yarkar has another interesting comment, in addition to the fact that perhaps it's tefillin service as a reminder of Hashem's existence, and to avoid things that we shouldn't be doing that go against what Hashem wants from us. Kli Yarkar says that he says he's kir yad kehe, meaning when a man puts on tefillin, so they put it on their non-dominant arm. That whatever power a person has, they have none of it without Hashem. And that's why it goes on our weaker art. Without Hashem, you got none of it. So we put these boxes with Hashem's name engraved in it on the weaker arm, in order to demonstrate that it's Hashem's strong arm that gives us any sort of power whatsoever. And in fact, if you think of the right arm being dominant, and this is, of course, very righty-centric, But if you think of the right arm being dominant, so it's like, so Hashem's right arm, so to speak, it corresponds with our left arm. So that is meant to accentuate the idea that any power we have really emanates from Hashem's ability to assist us. And he goes on to say, that anything that we do, none of it's really dependent on us. It depends on Hashem's help. So, you know, I guess I would emphasize it doesn't mean that literally means that we can't do anything and we're entirely controlled. We have free will. We have nothing without, at a certain point, you still can't do anything without doing some hishtadlus. But you also have to recognize that even to get to that point, you need Hashem's assistance. So this is a reminder of the limits of our own power, which actually, as I think about it right now, it's kind of significant because Paro is a personality that thinks that he can do anything and everything that he wants. That's, you know, one of the big messages of the Makos is Paro thinking that he can he can literally do anything and everything, and he's a deity and he's in control, and whatever emotion Aaron can do, his own magicians can do. But this comes to remind us of Hashem's role. Hashem strengthens us, and Yetzias Mitzrayim was a result of Hashem's work. It's not motion. It's not anything else. The Netziv and Ha'amid Davar. So he has both in the first passage and the second passage that are mentioned. He has comments that are both worth saying. So number one, he says that if a person tells their children a story and it has a big message, right? They give them either telling them a story, it's Musar Shmuz, something like that. So it might be like a big idea, a big message that needs to be expressed, but perhaps you're going to remind that child every day, you know, just hint to it. You're not going to tell the whole story every time, but those messages are going to creep in from time to time all throughout the year. And I think about this as a teacher. Obviously, there's certain key principles that we communicate on the first day of school, for example, like what it means to be respectful and the like. So we don't give a whole speech every day, but you obviously, you know, drop those nuggets throughout the year. So you have one time that you do it, you know, they give the longer version, and then you otherwise have the short reminders. Same thing with Yetzias Mitzrayim, that we have one time of the year, we have the midst of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, where we tell the story at length, but then everything else is Lasok Shayim Alza Bechol Yom. But tefillin, we're connected back to Yetziat Mitzrayim. Tefillin is that reminder of the story of the of Yetziat Mitzrayim. So we don't tell the whole story from beginning to end every day, and we don't dwell on it at length. But putting on tefillin once a day reminds us of those messages. There's something to be said for the fact also that there's a pasuk in Parsha Re'eh that says, "Lamanti scored Yom Tzedekah Meretz Yitzchayim Kol Yom Yichayach." You're supposed to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim all the days of your life. So that's a particular source for mentioning Yetzias Mitzrayim every day, and that's one of the reasons why we say the paragraph Vayomer in Shema. Besides the fact that the morning has to do with tzitzis, but the reason why we do it both morning and night is because we have that daily reminder. And so there's Sipur all throughout the year, and then there's those different times where we remind ourselves of Yetzias Mitzrayim as a foundational event that serves as the basis of our faith and everything that we do in Judaism. So tefillin is part of that, Shema is part of that. Okay, and then he goes on to say that in theory, learning Torah is supposed to be that, you know, reminder to be loyal to Hashem, but not everybody, but remarkably he says, not everybody has that ability to be amel batorah, to toil in Torah to that point where that would be the case. So therefore, Tillin sort of accomplishes that purpose. And the relevance of that is that in the Psukim, it says, in order that the Torah of Hashem be your mouth. So in theory, learning Torah should, learning Torah itself should foster that faith and that loyalty to Hashem. But not everybody can study it as in depth to that point. So it's actually, a remarkable thing that for the very least, wearing tefillin would seem to serve that purpose. Another piece in Hamakdavar later on compares tefillin to weapons, which is kind of interesting. But tefillin are the weapons that make the heart and the mind subservient to Malchus Shemaim, to Hashem's throne. Again, we're getting this theme developing here of the fact that tefillin are on the arm and between the eyes is meant to foster this sense of commitment, of subservience, and not letting our thoughts and desires take us to wherever we want, whatever we want, but to be servants of Hashem. So tefillin is kind of like a weapon like that. And again, he comments on the idea that in theory Torah should do that, but it's not necessarily enough. So that's why you have tefillin for, right? So he sort of repeats that comment. And then he compares, he expands upon this comparison of Torah to a weapon that let's say soldier has a sword. So that sword only really gives them any power, does them any good when they have the protection of the throne, when they have support of the throne. If a soldier goes out to battle by themselves, it doesn't do them very much good. But when you have that sort of authority, or even if you're just serving as a guard, when you have that authority, so that's where it serves you the most. And Mimela, it kind of reminds you of who you're serving, right? That you're doing this not for yourself or for some fun purpose, but you're doing it in order to serve your country, to serve your leadership and the like. So same thing with tefillin also, that tefillin is a reminder of the ruler that we're serving. So even if we don't have this battle that we're constantly fighting with the Yetzer Hara, which maybe we are, but even if we're not, so tefillin reminds us of Mishel Kono Misra Tolav, of what our duties are. So when somebody puts on tefillin every morning, especially meaningful doing that in the morning, so it reminds one of their purpose, who they're serving, and why they're doing it. Last Befarsha I'll go through, and then we'll hop to the Sefer Chinuch, who will give us more to think about. So the Mashal Chachma, it's of this idea that they talks about the difference between Ot and Zikaron. That earlier on in the Psukim, in the first Pasuk, it says, La'ot ayotcha zikaron beinenecha. It's a sign on your hand and remembrance between your eyes. So what's that about? What's the difference between Ot and Zikaron? So Ot is a sign, meaning a sign for the future. Zikaron is a remembrance of the past. So he says, we remember the principles of providence that we gained through Hashem's redeeming us from Egypt, etc. So then it says, we were at one of our lowest points when we left Egypt. Both physically and spiritually, we're at one of our lower points. But with all that said, Hashem kept his end of the covenant and redeemed us. So that is the Zikaron. And then the tefillin are serving as a sign that Hashem will do that for us in the future as well, that Hashem will bring us to redemption also. So it's sort of an empowering idea that redemption can come in some sort of unexpected place. And if we might think, well, we're never going to be on that level where we're worthy of being redeemed, so just remember that in Mitzrayim, the Jews had no, B'nai Israel had no special status they were slaves. There's not necessarily much that made them, you know, that any sort of royalty, anything that, you know, otherwise logically would, you know, you would think that, you know, that these that it's that's worth it. That these are the people who, you know, demonstrate themselves as to be the ones that, you know, you want to save. They're the underdogs. Nonetheless, Hashem comes along and redeems them, and also even without necessarily the spiritual merit. Something to remember. Okay, so Sefer Chinuch goes through, of course, every of the 613 mitzvahs. And interestingly, he does not bring this up in Parshat Bo. He brings it up in Parshat Dvarim. I'm not entirely sure. Why he does that. But remarkably, he separates it into two mitzvahs, and the implication of that I will come back to in a little bit. So there's one mitzvah of Til and Shel Yad, and another mitzvah of Til and Shel Rosh. So it comes to the Til and Shel Yad. So he says we're supposed to tie these four parshio, meaning the two from Bo and the two of Shema and Sefer Dvarim. Those are supposed to be tied to our arms with it, and we understand from Chazal we're supposed to do that with leather straps. And he goes on to explain that two are from Parsha Bo, the passages I showed you before. One is from Ve'etchanan, which is Shema, and then Ve'hayam Shema is the last one. You're supposed to write it on parchment, and you roll it up like a Sefer Torah. You put it in these leather boxes, and you tie them all together. So that's the mitzvah tevil, and that's what it's supposed to look like. So that's what he starts off by saying. So the Sefer Chinuch almost always gives a reason for a root for the commandment, what it means, what it symbolizes. It's a great debate to what extent we can understand the reasons for the commandments. But here he goes on to say, that people we're people of Chomer, we live in a material world, and therefore we go seeking after pleasures. And the purpose of tefillin is to subjugate our hearts and our minds to Hashem, and as we were saying before, to mitigate the influence of our desires. So he goes on to say, "Ratzah Malkom Baruch Hu Lizchotenu Anachnu Amakodesh Zivanu Lamid Shomim Giburim Savivla." That what's the purpose of tefillin and many other mitzvahs? Mezuzah. Tzitzis, all these are examples of mitzvahs that are meant to protect us. That in as much as we are people of needs and desires and pleasure, and sometimes that leads us to places where we're not supposed to go. Nonetheless, Hashem gave us that built-in protection. Tefillin is that reminder of that. And in fact, in theory, one would wear tefillin all day, every day. I'm not going to go too much into that right now, but in theory, actually, there was in time of Chazal, it was assumed that one should wear tefillin every day. We'll get to slightly why we don't do that anymore. But it wasn't just something you take on and you put off, but something that really was there all day, and that's meant to be some sort of protection to remind us. Rabbi Tzvi Sobolovsky has written in a couple of different places about the comparison to tefillin and Beis HaMikdash. So if you're carrying this mini Beis HaMikdash on you all day, every day, so that has a little bit of an influence. So that's a chinuch perspective. So it doesn't mention anything about Yetzias Mitzrayim here, but we have seen that, you know, kind of like what the Kli Yakar was saying, that it even connected to Ramban, that if the head and the heart, or the heart and the eyes and the heart are the places where our thoughts are, where we're looking, where we're feeling, where our desires are. So tefillin is tied to that specifically to remind us of what our obligations and duties are. Then the Chinuch goes through some of the particular laws, the particular halachos of the particular mitzvah. So I'm not going to go through everything he says here. We'd be here for a while, but I'll just go through very quickly that there are 10 things with tefillin. There are halacha l'moshe mi Sinai, that they were commanded to Moshe at Sinai, not directly recorded in the Torah, but the tradition is assumed to go back there. And if you change any of them, the tefillin are invalid. So two of them are related to the way you write them, and eight of them are related to the cover. So when it comes to the writing, it has to be in ink, and it has to be on parchment. When it comes to the covering, so the whole thing has to be evenly square, that there has to be the shin on the right and the left of the shel rosh, that you're supposed to wrap the parshiot in a cloth, and that then you wrap them with the hair of a kosher animal over the cloth, and then you put them inside the leather boxes. You have to use tendons to sew the boxes together. There has to be a maver. There has to be like a way for the leather to. There has to be like a hole for the leather to go through, but it has to be designed in a particular way. And the straps have to be black. And there has to, and the knot on the back of the knot needs to form a dalet. So these are the 10 different things I'm active with tefillin, just to give us a little bit of a sense. And it shows you a little bit that there's, you know, that I remember when I was learning this in Daf Yomi, that it really gives you sort of a sense of all that, you know, all these details. So, you know, sometimes details of mitzvahs sort of develop over time, but these details we really pay attention very closely to. They're Lach LaMoshe MiSinai, and there's a lot of there's a lot of care that goes into making tefillin from the beginning to the end. So Chinuch goes on to say that you put on the shel yad first and then the shel rosh, and then you do the opposite when you take it off. I'll mention here. So the Shulchan Aruch says that you make one bracha on putting on tefillin. And when you put it on the shel rosh, you don't make a bracha because it's one bracha for both of them. So this assumes that tefillin is really one mitzvah. What's interesting is both the Chinuch and the Rambam count tefillin as two separate mitzvahs, and that would explain the position of the Ramah that Ashkenazim follow, but make two different brachas on putting on tefillin. And it's a whole controversy, and some, you know, some say that that's why you say Baruch Shein Kvel Malchut Olam V'Ed after you put on the second tefillin. It's also a little bit debatable. Aruch HaShulchan takes issue with that understanding of it, but it's actually interesting because here I'm telling the Chinuch says there's two separate mitzvahs, but that sort of generates a whole machlokas whether this is one mitzvah or two mitzvahs. Chinuch also notes that we don't put on tefillin on Shabbos and Yom Tov, because if the idea of tefillin is being an oath, it's being a sign. So Shabbos and tefillin themselves are a sign. When we go out to work every day, so maybe we're engaged in mundane things, and maybe we need the reminder of Hashem's existence, providence, our commitment to Torah mitzvos. But on Shabbos and Yom Tov, when that's everything that what we're doing, so you don't necessarily need that reminder. Chinuch goes on to talk about how tefillin require guf naki. So what's guf naki? Says it's that you're not supposed to pass gas in them. As a definition of kufnaki. So that generates a certain ideas that now one doesn't wear tefillin when their body, maybe if you're having stomach issues or the like, so you shouldn't put on tefillin if it's going to be difficult to control passing gas. Chinuch is careful to say that kufnaki doesn't mean spiritually kufnaki. So if you have any sort of tuma or if you've done any sins, you can still put on tefillin. We're not going to cancel the mitzvah for that reason. And if anything, maybe tefillin will remind you to be careful. But that's what the Chinuch says, and that's going to be important to something we come back to. When it comes to the shel rosh, so again, as I've been saying, the Chinuch counts it as a separate mitzvah. So, so why these four passages? That's what the Ramban was also addressing. Why these four passages? We accept the yoke of heaven, and we recognize the unity of Hashem. This is an important expression here because, you know, mentioned at the beginning, there's obviously a relationship between Yetzias Mitzrayim and the mitzvah of tefillin, but why should that be so? Because Yitzias Mitzrayim requires us, if you think about Yitzias Mitzrayim, so that should require a renewed faith, an understanding that, you know, beating all odds, Bnei Israel were redeemed, and that's only because Hashem guided them. Hashem took them out of a seemingly impossible situation and redeemed them. And he says, Ve'elu hen yisodos das Yehudas. And this is the basic foundations of the Jewish religion. So that's why we have these four passages. They all speak to these ideas of accepting the yoke of heaven, the unity of Shem, our commitment to doing mitzvahs, and Yitzias Mitzrayim isn't just, you know, another story or another, you know, mitzvah associated with it, but really speaks to the whole foundation of our faith. And that's why, and then the chinuch goes on to say, that's why you, in theory, supposed to wear tefillin all day, because we're supposed to have those messages in mind all day. So why is it that people don't wear tefillin all day? So that goes back to the goof naki issue. That there was a sense that perhaps we really can't be as careful in wearing tefillin, so we don't weigh them as much. I'm going to come back to that even more in a second. I also just wanted to share the approach of the Pinyanei Halacha here, because I like how he develops it. He says that in these four parshios, the basic foundations of faith are expressed as we saw in the Chinuch, but he creates a progression here. B'shtei parshios harishonos, the first two parshios, Mevu Arot Kedushat B'chorot Yisrael V'tziyah Mitzrayim V'chag HaPasach. We have the sanctity of the firstborns leaving Egypt, the holiday of Pasach, and Mavat Imek Dusha Tamsko Tamsha Yisrael. They express the holiness and the singularity of the Jewish people. That Hashem took us out of Egypt with signs and wonders. Hashem is watching and taking part in the whole world. Everything is in his hands. Leaving Egypt is the basic foundation of faith for the Jewish people, that they saw with their own eyes Hashem's running the whole world, that he took them out of Egypt with great signs and wonders, as we've been saying. And we've passed on that from generation to generation. Okay, so that's why these first two parshiot from Bo are so important. That's why we put them in the tefillin. Okay, and then he goes on to say, when it comes to Shema, so that goes on to express the uniqueness and the unity of Hashem. And that's something we pass on. And then the last parsha is that we end up in the land of Israel, and we fulfill all the mitzvahs. So he sort of shows this progression that first we see the providence of Hashem, that he took us out of Egypt. We see the wonders and the miracles. And that should lead us to an acceptance of Hashem, and finally an acceptance of his mitzvot, a commitment to them, and commitment to doing them in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so now one thing I want to go back to that was in the Chinuch, which is very interesting, is that the Chinuch says that this mitzvah applies in all times and places to males, but not females, because it's a mitzvah sase shekels zman grama. We don't wear tefillin at night. That's discussion. We don't wear tefillin at night, let's just say, and we don't wear tefillin on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So therefore, women don't wear. But interestingly, he says, mikol makom im ratzu laniach im amach miyadam. But if women want to wear tefillin, they get reward for it. And he mentions certain examples, Michal bat Shaul and the wife of Yonah, that the sages didn't protest. He says it's okay. However, with that said, even with that opinion of the Chinuch, the Shulchan Aruch goes on. The Mechaber, who's Sephardi, simply says that women don't have to put on tefillin; they're exempt because it's based on Aseh Shesman Grama. The Ramah adds, if women want to be stringent, bochin biyadan, we protest. We don't permit them to do that. So this is highly unusual, because if a woman wants to fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah, to do lulav, to daven, to davening's obligation, to say shema, So there's plenty of examples of mitzvot aseh she'esban grama, time-bound mitzvahs where women are allowed to do it if they want to, and yet the Shulchan Aruch is saying that we prevent them from doing it. So some of the reasons given here would not entirely resonate today with us. The way the Pinyan Halacha I was quoting before says it, I think is one that perhaps we can wrap our heads around a little bit more. And he says the following. The reason is we try to be very careful to again if tefillin are extremely they're tashmishi kedusha, almost not quite the sefer Torah, but as close as you get to a mitzvah object that gets to it. We talked about the importance of guf naki. So when it comes to men, what ended up happening was that men ended up doing it for the least amount of time possible. So we just do it at Shacharit, but we just to do the mitzvah, but no longer than that. And since he says, since women aren't obligated at all, why put oneself at risk of not honoring the tefillin? And that explains the reason why women the custom that women don't wear tefillin. So in other words, it's saying that really in theory, you know, men have to, but it's kind of precarious. There's concerns. So once you're not obligated to do it, it's better not to put one in the situation. Now, what Rav Malami goes on to say is that in theory, if a woman really on that level, she wants to do more and more mitzvahs. So if she asks, the answer would be she shouldn't put it on. But he's willing to say if somebody really, really felt like they connected to that mitzvah and they wanted to do it privately, even though many people have said that they shouldn't do it, nonetheless, women have what to rely on. For example, the Sefer Achinuch, and one shouldn't make too much of a protest about it. So this, you know, has become a very interesting discussion in America. You know, there's some postgame who are particularly concerned that because wearing tefillin was something that was sort of embraced by some more liberal movements, there's some who are especially worried that this would bring a degradation to the Masorah, in addition to the fact that the Rama says we don't do it, and that's become the dominant psak. There's some concerns about breach of custom and the like. Nonetheless, Rabbi Melamed is willing to take a leading position if somebody really wants this. This has been controversial at various points. There's a part of me that truthfully thinks that when so many people leave faith and do other things that are so antithetical to Judaism, so my protest would not necessarily be about this issue. But with that said, it's an issue that comes up. It's one that needs to be dealt with carefully. But certainly, there's what to be said for the fact that the Rama says that even with other passive mitzvahs, women don't do it. So since the Rama says that and nobody really seems to argue with him about that, that's sort of what comes out of that. So what we've said so far, and I guess I'll summarize sort of the purpose of tefillin by reading the Shulchan Aruch, because when it comes to some mitzvahs you do, it doesn't necessarily matter what kavan you have in mind. But since clearly the Torah links tefillin to Yetzias Mitzrayim and to some very important messages of faith and loyalty to Hashem and commitment to doing mitzvot and to the Torah. So once that already is sort of clear from the Torah, so it's obviously very important that you have that in mind when doing the mitzvah, right? That's what the famous idea of the Bach, the Bayit Chadash, when it comes to Sukkah, is that when it comes to Sukkah, so we know exactly why Hashem gave us Sukkah. So part of fulfilling the mitzvah is thinking about that. So the Shulchan Aruch right here, Yichavim ba'nachtam shetzivan HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'aniach arba parshiyot elu, sheyesh bahem yichud shmo v'yitzya Mitzrayim al zera keneged halev. So we're supposed to put on the tefillin, and we're supposed to think about, we're supposed to have kavana of the unity of Shem, Yitzias Mitzrayim, when we put it on our arm against our heart, on our head, corresponding to the brain, Kadesh Gispar Nisi Vinifla Chasa Imanu. So remember the miracles. This isn't necessarily one that's come up, you know, as explicitly, but it's just Mitzrayim in addition to just lofty things about faith. But we're also, you know, remembering actual miracles that were done for us. Etc. Vishabi la Kodesh Baruch Neshama Shiba Moach, and we're supposed to subject our souls to Hashem, and also our hearts, where our desires are. Then we'll remember Hashem, and we'll gain in less of our pleasures. So, in some way, this is like sort of a good summary of a lot of different aspects that we've seen. But we've seen the link between Yetzias Mitzrayim and Tefillin, where we remind ourselves that Yetzias Mitzrayim is not just a historical event of some sort, just like in United States history we have certain events that we think about, we commemorate, but this is not just a historical event, but it really is the foundation of our becoming a nation, the foundation of our becoming Hashem's servants instead of Paro's servants. Remember, Hashem's existence, providence, is dominance. It generates our faith, our commitment to doing mitzvot. So that's one of the main messages of Tefillin. I've said till now has assumed, as Rashi said, that when Torah says to when it should be a sign on your hand and a memory between your eyes, that means that you're supposed to write these parshiot and tie them, as Rashi said. That's everything we've been assuming till now. That's obviously how Chazal understood it. That's how all the Mefarshim take it. But comes Rashbam, or Shmuel ben Meir, who's Rashi's grandson. And Rashbam was super driven to explain the Torah at, I don't want to say literal, but in the most plain explanation, not through Midrash and through interpretation, but if you look at the Pesukim and you just want to understand what is this Pasuk saying, give that basic explanation. So Rashbam famously says in this Pasuk, if he omek pshuta, according to the depth of the plain explanation, you should remember it as if it were written on your arm. So Rashbam is dropping here is that the pshat of the Pasuk is not that you're supposed to have these actual signs on your arm, but you see it's describing so much on our mind that's as if it's written on our arm, which is a very fascinating thing. Dr. Mordechai Cohen, in his book Rule of Pshat, explains that it actually, in some ways, the idea that Tefillin would come up here is a little bit strange, because everything here seems to be doing about Pesach. So why all of a sudden is there a separate mitzvah coming in here? So in some ways, what Rashbam is saying really does kind of fit the pshat. But still, there's something uncomfortable with the fact that Rashbam is saying the plain message goes against halacha. So in the Mayam Beis HaShoeva, Rabbi Shimon Schwab writes that anybody who sees what Rashbam says should wonder what's going on, because Chazal understood that the obligation of Tefillin is to put it on your arm. So what's Rashbam doing here? And there are a lot of Rishonim, including I want to say the Ibn Ezra was an example of this, that even if the simple basic understanding of the pasuk would seem to go against Chazal, so then you want to try to figure out how Chazal understood him and try to make sure it fits with Chazal. So he says, based on this, we have the pasuk Gal Einai V'Abita Nifla Mitoratecha. My eyes will see and be wondered by your Torah. Ki gam shena mich betoch habshat habpashut yigalu l'faneinu limudim niflaim. Even when we're looking just at the basic pshat, there's still things that we can learn from it. There's still lessons that we can glean from it that help us better appreciate the Torah. It's not meant to reject Chazal, God forbid. It's supposed to increase our appreciation for a Torah message. And Rav Schwab says, maybe what Rashbam is trying to tell us, that there are times where we're not wearing tefillin. Night, Shabbos, Yom Tov. And I would add to that, this is true for women as well. Now, even if you're not actually fulfilling the mitzvah of ukshartam leot ayadecha, even if you're not actually putting it on your arm, Al ze morer lanu omer kapshat shegam b'layva b'shabbat v'yomtov yesh kiyum iyan ha'tfilin sheyeh lanu l'zikaron ki'ilu katuv al yadeinu. That when we think about Hashem, when we internalize the messages of tefillin, even when we're not wearing them, it's as if it's still written on our arm. So I think it's a beautiful idea that at the end of the day, the tefillin serve us as a reminder, and as I think it was Nitziv was saying, that tefillin sort of guard us. That the tefillin guard us and provide us, you know, protection to remind us to do mitzvot. Even if you, even as it's helpful sometimes to have these physical reminders, it's not really about the physical reminders. But even when we don't have the physical reminders, being able to internalize the message is the most important thing, and that's what we should strive for. That's what we should try to understand, and we should take that with us, even when, even if, you know, we never do the mitzvah, even if we're not doing the mitzvah at this particular moment. Just to make one last point, I know I've been going on for a long time, but just a couple of concluding points. I think it's good for men who wear tefillin. I think it's important to say all the four parshiot, because we obviously say Shema and Ve'yam Shemo as part of davening, but when you put on tefillin, I think it's good to wear, to say the passages from Parshat Bo as well, because you want that element of Yitzhak Mitzrayim and they're written in them. So really the whole thing should be mentioned. As of about 9 months ago, it was really during the pandemic that I started focusing on this more, that I say it's a passage that you can see before putting on tefillin that gets to the kavanas that the Shulchan Aruch was saying that we should have. And I think it's good to remind ourselves why those of us wear tefillin, why we're wearing it, because it's important to internalize those messages. And that's what we should think about, of course, while wearing tefillin, I think it really has a power to shape our entire religious consciousness for the whole day. But even when we're not wearing tefillin, those days we're not wearing tefillin, even if we're not involved in the bits of tefillin ever. But the message that Yitzhak Mitzrayim is the foundation of our faith and Hashem, and that we are Hashem's servants, and that we should be in control of our hearts and our minds.